and lit my paper towel roll. I threw the flaming roll into the kindling and watched it light. It caught and grew and spread. Through the double wide study doors, I saw a line of flame zip down the hallway on one side and into the living room on the other. The couch lit up. Then, before me, the bookshelves burst into flames, the gas-soaked paper burning quicker than anything else. Suddenly, the ceiling was alight. I couldn't look away. The flames were terrible, unearthly. Then someone screamed, and screamed again. It was coming from the room directly above me, a bedroom. Johnny was working on the second floor. I had lit the study, and the study had burned faster than anywhere else. The fire was rising, and Johnny wasn't out. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. I threw myself at the back door, but found it heavily bolted. My hands were slippery with gas. The metal was hot already. I flipped the bolts, one, two, three, but something went wrong, and the door stuck. Another scream. I tried the bolts again. Failed. Gave up. I covered my mouth and nose with my hands and ran through the burning study and down the flaming hallway into the kitchen. The room wasn't lit yet, thank God. I rushed across the wet floor toward the mudroom door. Stumbled, skidded, and fell, soaking myself in the puddles of gasoline. The hems of my jeans were burning from my run through the study. The flames licked out to the gas on the kitchen floor and streaked across to the wooden farmhouse cabinetry and Grand's cheery dish towels. Fire zipped across the mudroom exit in front of me, and I could see my jeans were now alight as well from knee to ankle. I hurled myself through the mudroom door, running through flames. "Get out!" I yelled, though I doubted anyone could hear me. "Get out now!" Outside, I threw myself onto the grass, rolled until my pants stopped burning. I could see already that the top two floors of Claremont were glowing with heat, and my own ground floor was fully alight. The basement level, I couldn't tell. "Kat? Johnny? Mirren? Where are you?" No answer. Holding down panic, I told myself they must be out by now. Calm down. It would all be okay. It had to. "Where are you?" I yelled again, beginning to run. Again, no answer. They were likely at the boathouse, dropping their gas cans. It wasn't far, and I ran, calling their names as loud as I could. My bare feet hit the wooden walkway with a strange echo. The door was closed. I yanked it open. "Kat? Johnny? Mirren?" No one there. But they could already be at Cuddledown, couldn't they? Wondering what was taking me so long. A walkway stretches from the boathouse past the tennis courts and over to Cuddledown. I ran again, the island strangely hushed in the dark. I told myself over and over, they will be there, waiting for me, worrying about me. We will laugh because we're all safe. We will soak my burns in ice water and feel all kinds of lucky. We will. But as I came upon it, I saw the house was dark. No one waited there. I tore back to Claremont, and when it came into view, it was burning, bottom to top. The turret room was lit. The bedrooms were lit. The windows of the basement glowed orange. Everything hot. I ran to the mudroom entry and pulled the door. Smoke billowed out. I pulled off my gas-soaked sweater and jeans, choking and gagging. I pushed my way in and entered the kitchen stairwell, heading toward the basement. Halfway down the steps, there was a wall of flames. A wall. Gat wasn't out, and he wasn't coming. I turned back and ran up toward Johnny and Mirren, but the wood was burning beneath my feet. The banister lit up. The stairwell in front of me caved in, throwing sparks. I reeled back. I could not go up. I could not save them. There was nowhere. 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 Nowhere now to go. But down. Chapter 82. I remember this like I am living it as I sit on the steps of Windermere, still staring at the spot where Gat disappeared into the night. The realization of what I have done comes as a fog in my chest, cold, dark, and spreading. I grimace and hunch over. The icy fog runs from my chest through my back and up my neck. It shoots through my head and down my spine. Cold, cold remorse. I shouldn't have soaked the kitchen first. I shouldn't have lit the fire in the study. How stupid to wet the book so thoroughly. Anyone might have predicted how they would burn. Anyone. We should have had a set time to light our kindling. I might have insisted we stay together. I should never have checked the boathouse. Should never have run to Cuddle Down. If only I'd gone back to Claremont faster, maybe I could have gotten Johnny out, or warned Gat before the basement caught. Maybe I could have found the fire extinguishers and stopped the flames somehow. Maybe. Maybe. If only. If only. I wanted so much for us. A life free of constriction and prejudice. A life free to love and be loved. And here, I have killed them. My liars. My darlings. Killed them. My Mirren, my Johnny, my Gat. This knowledge goes from my spine, down my shoulders, and through my fingertips. It turns them to ice. They chip and break, tiny pieces shattering on the Windermere steps. Cracks splinter at my arms and through my shoulders and the front of my neck. My face is frozen and fractured in a witch's snarl of grief. My throat is closed. I cannot make a sound. Here I am frozen when I deserve to burn. I should have shut up about taking things into our own hands. I could have stayed silent, compromised. Talking on the phone would have been fine. Soon we'd have driver's licenses. Soon we'd go to college, and the beautiful Sinclair houses would seem far away and unimportant. We could have been patient. I could have been a voice of reason. Maybe then, when we drank the auntie's wine, we'd have forgotten our ambitions. The drink would have made us sleepy. We'd have dozed off in front of the television set, angry and impotent, perhaps, but without setting fire to anything. I can't take any of it back. I crawl indoors and up to my bedroom on hands of cracked ice, trailing shards of my frozen body behind me, my heels, my kneecaps. Beneath the blankets, I shiver convulsively, pieces of me breaking off into my pillow, fingers, teeth, jawbone, collarbone. Finally, finally, the shivering stops. I begin to warm and melt. I cry for my aunts who lost their firstborn children, for Will, who lost his brother, for Liberty, Bonnie, and Taft, who lost their sister, for Granddad, who saw not just his palace burn to the ground, but his grandchildren perish, for the dogs, the poor, naughty dogs. I cry for the vain, thoughtless complaints I've made all summer, for my shameful self-pity, for my plans for the future. I cry for all my possessions given away. I miss my pillow, my books, my photographs. I shudder at my delusions of charity, at my shame masquerading as virtue, at lies I've told myself, punishments I've inflicted on myself, and punishments I've inflicted on my mother. I cry with horror that all the family has been burdened by me, and even more with being the cause of so much grief. We did not, after all, save the idol. That is gone forever if it ever existed. We have lost the innocence of it. Of those days before we knew the extent of the aunt's rage, before Gran's death and Granddad's deterioration, before we became criminals, before we became ghosts. The aunties hug one another not because they are freed of the weight of Claremont House and all it symbolized, but out of tragedy and empathy. Not because we freed them, but because we wrecked them, and they clung to one another in the face of horror. Johnny. Johnny wanted to run a marathon. He wanted to go mile upon mile, proving his lungs would not give out, proving he was the man Granddad wanted him to be, proving his strength, though he was so small. His lungs filled with smoke. He has nothing to prove now. There is nothing to run for. He wanted to own a car and eat fancy cakes he saw in bakery windows. He wanted to laugh big and own art and wear beautifully made clothes, sweaters, scarves, woolly items with stripes. He wanted to make a tuna fish of Lego and hang it like a piece of taxidermy. He refused to be serious. He was infuriatingly unserious, but he was as committed to the things that mattered to him as anyone could possibly be. The running, Will and Carrie, the liars, his sense of what was right. He gave up his college fund without a second thought to stand up for his principles. I think of Johnny's strong arms, the stripe of white sunblock on his nose, the time we were sick together from poison ivy and lay next to each other in the hammock scratching, the time he built me and Marin a dollhouse of cardboard and stones he'd found on the beach. Jonathan Sinclair Dennis. You would have been a light in the dark for so many people. You have been one. You have. And I let you down the worst possible way. I cry for Mirren, who wanted to see the Congo. She didn't know how she wanted to live or what she believed yet. She was searching and knew she was drawn to that place. It will never be real to her now. Never anything more than photographs and films and stories published for people's entertainment. Mirren talked a lot about sexual intercourse, but never had it. When we were younger, she and I would stay up late sleeping together on the Windermere porch in sleeping bags, laughing and eating fudge. We fought over Barbie dolls and did each other's makeup and dreamed of love. Mirren will never have a wedding with yellow roses, or a groom who loves her enough to wear a stupid yellow cummerbund. She was irritable and bossy, but always funny about it. It was easy to make her mad. And she was nearly always cross with Bess and annoyed with the twins. But then she'd fill with regret, moaning in agony over her own sharp tongue. She did love her family, loved all of them, and would read them books or help them make ice cream or give them pretty shells she had found. She cannot make amends anymore. She did not want to be like her mother. Not a princess, no. An explorer, a businesswoman, a good Samaritan, an ice cream maker, something. Something she will never be because of me. Mirren, I can't even say sorry. There is not even a Scrabble word for how bad I feel. And Gat, my cat. He will never go to college. He had that hungry mind, constantly turning things over, looking not for answers, but for understanding. He will never satisfy his curiosity. Never finish 100 best novels ever written. Never be the great man he might have been. He wanted to stop evil. He wanted to express his anger. He lived big, my brave cat. He didn't shut up when people wanted him to. He made them listen, and then he listened in return. He refused to take things lightly, though he was always quick to laugh. Oh, he made me laugh. And made me think, even when I didn't feel like thinking, even when I was too lazy to pay attention. Gat let me bleed on him, and bleed on him, and bleed on him. He never minded. He wanted to know why I was bleeding. He wondered what he could do to heal the wound. He will never eat chocolate again. I loved him. I love him as best I could. But he was right. I did not know him all the way. I will never see his apartment, eat his mother's cooking, meet his friends from school. I will never see the bedspread on his bed or the posters on his walls. I'll never know the diner where he got egg sandwiches in the morning or the corner where he double-locked his bike. I don't even know if he bought egg sandwiches or hung posters. I don't know if he owned a bike or had a bedspread. I am only imagining the corner bike racks and the double locks because I never went home with him. Never saw his life. Never knew that person Gat was when not on Beechwood Island. His room must be empty by now. He has been dead 2 years. We might have been. We might have been. I have lost you, Gat, because of how desperately, desperately I fell in love. I think of my liars burning in their last few minutes, breathing smoke, their skin alight. How much it must have hurt. Mirren's hair in flames. Johnny's body on the floor, Gat's hands. His fingertips burnt, his arms shriveling with fire. On the backs of his hands, words, left Gat, right Cadence. My handwriting. I cry because I am the only one of us still alive, because I will have to go through life without the liars, because they will have to go through whatever awaits them without me. Me, Gat, Johnny, and Mirren. Mirren, Gat, Johnny, and me. We have been here this summer, and we have not been here. Yes and no. It is my fault. My fault. My fault. And yet, they love me anyway. Despite the poor dogs, despite my stupidity and grandiosity, despite our crime, despite my selfishness, despite my whining, despite my stupid dumb luck in being the only one left and my inability to appreciate it, when they have nothing, nothing anymore but this last summer together, they have said they love me. I have felt it in Gat's kiss, in Johnny's laugh. Mirren shouted it across the sea, even. I guess that is why they've been here. I needed them. Chapter 83. Mummy bangs on my door and calls my name. I do not answer. An hour later, she bangs again. Let me in, won't you? Go away. Is it a migraine? Just tell me that. It isn't a migraine, I say. It's something else. I love you, Katie, she says. She says it all the time since I got sick. But only now do I see that what Mummy means is, I love you in spite of my grief, even though you are crazy. I love you in spite of what I suspect you have done. You know we all love you, right? She calls through the door. Aunt Bess, and Aunt Carrie, and Granddad, and everyone. Bess is making the blueberry pie you like. It'll be out in half an hour. You could have it for breakfast, I asked her. I stand, go to the door, and open it a crack. Tobes, I say thank you, I say. I just can't come right now. You've been crying, Mummy says. A little. I see. Sorry. I know you want me at the house for breakfast.
You don't need to say you're sorry, Mummy tells me.